So we've just heard that well-known story of the woman coming to the well, probably carrying a heavy jar like that on her head, and probably having some sort of pouch they used to have, like a leather pouch folded up to enable her to get to the water. And have you wondered what happened to the woman in our story, referred to only as the woman at the well, after all these events that we read about? Well, recently I went on a local preacher's training weekend, and the speaker there, I pricked up my ears, relayed a legend attached to this story. I thought, oh good, I'm going to preach on that in a couple of weeks' time. This will come in handy. So I'm going to relay the legend. We heard in our reading, didn't we, that she ran into the town relaying her experience and saying to all who would listen, could this be the Christ? And she was obviously so convinced herself, wasn't she, by the experience of meeting Jesus, that she wanted to pass on that good news to others. Well, evidently she carried on as a sort of missionary and travelled around passing on the good news that he was the Messiah. And the legend has it that she eventually moved with her sons to the outskirts of Rome, where she continued to preach the word, much to the annoyance of the authorities at that time. And eventually she was thrown into jail, with the result that everyone in the jail was converted, prisoners and guards alike. And this came to the attention of the emperor, who was not best pleased, and who decided he would send his wife to try to stop this woman. He sent his wife, and what happened? She too became a Christian. But I'm afraid this was bad news for our heroine, of course, because she was then obviously slain, and she was martyred. And she was martyred appropriately, really, I suppose, in a weird way, by being thrown into a well. And she became known as Saint Fatina because she brought light to so many lives. So there we are. It wasn't in my saints book when I looked. I've got a book of saints, but I had it on very good authority that that's a really true legend. You can't have a true legend, can you? But for the Samaritan woman, her daily trip to the well, carried out, as we heard, at the hottest time of the day when no one else was around at noon, led to an unexpected encounter with Jesus, who used that meeting as an opportunity to break down racial, gender, and moral barriers. Racial, gender, and moral barriers just by a conversation with a woman who was shunned. The encounter with Jesus caused the woman, who was ostracized by her own community, to return to her people and spread the good news. But we understand by what was said in that reading that the disciples were somewhat shocked by the encounter, and it changed their perception of Jesus as their teacher. This was very early on in his ministry. They were getting to know what Jesus was all about. Many famous paintings there are of the woman at the well, and one of the most famous is one by Giacomo Franceschini, among many others, one of the most famous. And I had a look at it on, obviously, on my screen, and it depicts this scene so vividly, and it shows the disciples that were at the back of the picture with their heads together, looking very puzzled, seeing their master talking not only to a foreigner, but to a foreign woman. So Jesus, at this stage of his ministry, had decided that it was safer to transfer his operations from Judea to Galilee. And if you look at the back of your Bibles, there's a map of Palestine, and it's only 120 miles long from north to south. But at this time, there were three definite divisions of territory. In the extreme north lay Galilee, in the extreme south lay Jordan, and in between the two lay Samaria. And so the quickest route from one territory to another was to go through Samaria, because the other route took twice as long, as you'll see from the map. You've got to go around the other side of the river to reach Galilee. But the Jews had had this age-old feud with the Samaritans, who were interbred as a result of invasion, war and transportation of many of the original inhabitants. So they were therefore not looked upon as pure Jews, and looked upon as Gentiles and as unclean, as we heard. And so this little party of travellers, Jesus and his disciples, were in the desert region, and they came to a fork in the road near the town of Sychar, where to this day stands the well known as Jacob's Well, a well that is 100 feet deep, but a place full of memories for the Jews, because it was on the site of ground bequeathed to Joseph by his father Jacob. And it was supposed to be the burial place of Joseph. They brought his body there to be buried. But a well so deep that you need a vessel to lower in to obtain the water. And under the heat of the noonday sun comes this woman to draw water. A woman obviously equipped with the necessary vessel. Jesus hadn't got anything to use to draw water. And Jesus asks her for a drink. Asks her as if it was the most natural thing in the world to do. And she is astounded. Not only did Jews not speak to Samaritans, but she thought he was probably a rabbi, and they weren't allowed to speak to women at all outside their homes or places of worship at that time. And so to a Jew hearing this for the first time, this story, as written by John, this would have been an amazing story, because here was the Son of God, tired and weary and thirsty, the holiest of men, breaking through the barriers of nationality and custom in one foul swoop. And here really is the beginning of the spreading of the gospel to all. Here is God, so loving the world, but not just in theory, in action. So do we use our daily encounters to break down barriers and spread the good news? Do we allow our encounters, our daily encounters, to change us, perhaps to change us for the better? Or do we keep going? Do we keep our heads down and hope no one will hold us up by wanting to talk? I've had the perfect illustration this morning. Rosemary burst in through the door late-ish because she was going to practice her reading before the service. She meets someone she hadn't met for ages, and her actual instinct was to carry on with her head down because she wanted to get here and practice her reading. But she said, no, I thought, I'm going to church. How can I avoid someone when I'm actually on my way to church? So that was a living illustration of doing the right thing in that case, as she did. We recently had a talk here at Thursday Group by Marion Cleaver. Many of you were there, about her trip to visit a missionary family in Uganda. And as she showed slides of her travels with the family, she showed us a picture of the family in the foreground, and in the background, the husband was in deep conversation with some local men. And Marion explained, "Oh, that's Paul chatting to the locals about Jesus, I expect, because he can't stop himself. And I just thought that was marvellous. A true missionary using every opportunity to spread the good news of God's love that is available for all. And this is what he wanted to share with those people. Now, I know we cannot all do this. We're perhaps not equipped to speak eloquently or have the required confidence to do so. But we can show the love of God by giving people time, even if it means we don't perhaps achieve our aims for that day or that time. What if God was one of us waiting in the bus stop queue or in the supermarket? We don't have a meeting place like they did in ancient times at the well, but we do have endless opportunities to meet and to chat to others. For as Paul says in Hebrews 13, do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some people have entertained angels without knowing it. And so we are on this Lenten journey at the moment. And both our readings today are about people on a journey. Jesus and the disciples travelling to Galilee. And the people of Israel on their epic journey to the Promised Land. I don't know whether some of you remember from the past, some of you more recently, when you're travelling with children, what do they say from the back of the car when we've probably gone about 10 miles? Are we nearly there yet? I used to start when we were heading for the coast, Newmarket. That was my first wine, and we used to have to stop. But this is such a familiar cry. And how often do we set off on a journey in really good spirits and full of enthusiasm, only to find that we hit a problem? And our mood changes. The motorway is jammed after an accident. The train is delayed because of a power failure. Or the flight is cancelled due to poor weather. Do we wait calmly and patiently, have faith that all will be well? Or do we respond with anger and frustration? The Israelites in our Old Testament reading did just that, got angry and frustrated, grew impatient and weary. And rather than taking their moans directly to God, they take their impatience and discomfort to Moses, their leader, demanding the seemingly impossible, forgetting all the help that they'd already received from God on their journey, and looking back on the past through rose-tinted spectacles, forgetting the difficulties and the hardships they faced whilst they were slaves in Egypt and why they left that particular place. And the sort of faith that lets the Samaritan woman at the well see that Jesus is not a threat, in spite of his odd conduct, this doesn't seem to work for the Israelites. They don't seem to have this faith. They see Moses, their leader, without water to give them, and they panic, forgetting about his goodness and God's goodness in the past. And how good are we at remembering God's past faithfulness when things are going badly in our lives? How often do we take our frustrations out on our leaders, either our political leaders, or our church leaders, or leaders of any organisation to which we belong? We know, don't we, that in political life, huge promises are made and then there's huge disappointment when they cannot be realised. But do we sometimes expect too much of our leaders? Expect them to solve all our problems, just as the Israelites expected Moses to do so? Perhaps we should be more involved in working towards solutions for ourselves. We don't know what would have happened if the Israelites had got their heads together and tried to solve the water problems themselves. When things do not go their way, the Israelites automatically question whether God, a God who is up there on a pedestal to them, is he with them or not was how the reading ended. But Jesus' mode of leadership is to be God alongside us. We don't have to ask whether he's there or not, because we can see him. We can see him every day in the lives of those around us, showing his love in action. And we have the opportunity to show love in action by supporting today the appeal for aid in water-starved areas of the world, in North Africa, in East Africa, and in the Yemen. Water is the essential for life, but is such a scarce resource in so many places. I don't know whether any of you have ever been to, well, I'm sure lots of you have been to the Dead Sea and perhaps have seen the UNESCO World Heritage Site at Masada. And it contains the ruins of a great fortress, complete with cisterns and an elaborate system for storing rainwater drained from the nearby riverbeds. And if such ancient technology could apply itself to the problem of water shortages, how much more so is it essential for us today, with climate change high on the agenda? Instead of quarrelling over water resources, perhaps our challenge today is for different countries to work together to create affordable and sustainable sources and technologies. And meanwhile, what happens? We pick up the pieces because there's such a lack of water and send relief agencies to do what they can when, as now, a real emergency occurs. We don't know whether the woman actually drew her water, because she was so carried away, wasn't she, by the conversation with Jesus about this living water, which he said he could provide. So we don't know whether she actually got any real water. Jesus was referring to this water of life, a water of life to feed the soul, and a water of life that was and is available for all. This vulnerable woman with a doubtful past was so thrilled with the feeling of acceptance and love in spite of her race, in spite of her gender, and in spite of her background, that she rushed off, she left her water jar to share the good news that she had found and met the Christ, and she couldn't wait to share this good news with her neighbours and fellow town folk. And this is a challenge to us today. We know that Jesus offers us still that living water and wants us to share his love with all, to be so bursting with the good news that it spills out into our lives and touches all who we meet in our daily lives. And so I'm going to end with a really true story, with an illustration. A doctor is called to a hospital very late at night, and as he walks down the semi-dark hall with no one around, a man suddenly ran out of one of the patient rooms and ran up to him. The doctor had never seen him before, and he said with such joy on his face, "She's going to make it! She's going to make it!" And then he carried on running down the hallway, down the corridor. The doctor never saw him again, didn't know him, didn't know who he was talking about. He could only assume he was talking about someone very near and dear to him, and he just received good news about him or her. He couldn't wait to share it. He didn't even know the person he shared it with. It just flowed from him because he had received the good news. And good news is meant to be shared. Amen.